to try to just add more to this topic of et holcha mama menacha harov. So first, let's say a little bit of Torah Mada, a very little bit, and a very low level Torah Mada, because the source for this is completely Wikipedia, and another it's a low madrega. But it occurred to me that, you know, we keep making reference to the expression possession is 9/10 of the law, so it might be interesting to examine that a little bit. So comes in Wikipedia, and I did look it up. And it's just interesting, I'm going to read to you, it's only a few paragraphs long, or I'll read to you selectively. But it's just interesting to see how different interpretations of this phrase kind of overlap with the things we've been talking about, making indeed quite an appropriate reference. So here, quoting from Wikipedia, possession is 9/10 of the law is an expression, meaning that ownership is easier to maintain if one has possession of something, or difficult to enforce if one does not. The expression is also stated as possession is 9 points of the law, which is credited as derived from the Scottish expression, possession is 11 points in the law, and they say there are but 12. Although the principle is an oversimplification, it can be restated as, quote, in a property dispute, whether real or personal, in the absence of clear and compelling testimony or documentation to the contrary, the person in actual custodial possession of the property is presumed to be the rightful owner. The rightful owner shall have their possession returned to them if taken or used. The shirt or blouse you are currently wearing is presumed to be yours unless someone can prove it is not. Close quote. And then it has analysis here, which, don't worry, is only one paragraph long. The adage is not literally true, that by law, the person in possession is presumed to have a 9 times stronger claim than anyone else, but that, quote, it places in a strong light the legal truth that every claimant must succeed by the strength of his own title and not by the weakness of his antagonists. The principle bears some similarity to uti possetitis, as you possess, so you may continue to possess, which currently refers to the doctrine that colonial administrative boundaries become international boundaries when a political subdivision or colony achieves independence. Under Roman law, it was an interdictum ordering the parties to maintain possession of property until it was determined who owned the property. So I think you see there a couple of different interpretations of what the idea means, and I think it kind of graphs onto what we've seen within Chazak and Emotzi Mechavel Avaraya and the like. Now, what's your impression of that? Any comment? Any observations? Sam, you look like you might.
Sounds very similar.
Okay, sounds very similar. We'll go with that. Yeah.
I think that statement about that it has to be from the strength of your own claim, mm-hmm, as opposed to the weakness of the Mukhtar. I think that's an interesting formulation of it.
Yeah, indeed. So, and then also that Roman version sounds like it's more towards some of the other possibilities we saw, that it's about what we're going to get involved in. So let's say until we know what the truth is, so then we will leave it in the possession of the one who already has it.
That sounds more like a hug.
Right, I think it does. While the opening statement of that description, that it's a presumption of ownership to the person who is possessing it, it's a stronger statement, you know, to say that just because it's in your hands, therefore it's presumably yours. That's a little bit more. So I just thought that was interesting to share and something to think about. There are some armakomas in the bottom, footnotes that, but they're not, the footnotes there on that topic are not so Yesodistic, how they're presented in one version or the other. It's not clear that this is something, at least based on my extensive Wikipedia investigation, this is not clear that this is something that's rooted in an actual codification in a very clear sense. Okay, so related to that, so just to note some other observations, so there is a question in general that can be brought up in a number of contexts. But for example, those of us who were here for Kedushin, it was a while ago, we spoke about the Pidgin Aden at the end of the year in June. So there is a interplay there between a mominous obligation to give the money to the Kohen and a mitzvah. And it's an interesting question what exactly the story is if you have a suffik. You have a suffik b'chor, or you have a child who's a suffik treifa, unfortunately. So, for example, as the Gemara talks about, if the baby doesn't survive, but it's already been 30 days. So why would you or wouldn't you say Ein Holchem Mamon Achar Harov in that case? So just to kind of put this on the table as a notion, so the Hafla talks about this. The Hafla is the author of the Sefer HaMakna and Kedushin and the Sefer Panim Yafa Salat Torah. And we mentioned him a lot when we were learning Kedushin and Ksubis. So he assumes that when you have something that has nafkaminas for other purposes, for mitzvos and the like, so then we establish it based on its mitzvah relevance, and then the mominus flows from that, which relates to some of the points we mentioned so far. It relates to what we talked about in the end of the Motzei Mechavel of Haraya point about the question of why should we not say there's a suffik gezel for the person holding on to it, and what about in some circumstances where we do say something more like that. So that's just worth being aware of, and it's a whole topic in of itself.
If something has not been enough for other areas, malacha, then we go after the iser part?
That's how the hafla is assuming in that context, although I think you can bring a lot of points that will raise a question about that. But theoretically, yeah.
And therefore we would be able to go after it, okay. No problem.
Right, well, yeah, no problems might be an overstatement. But,
no problem for Shmuel.
Possibly, yeah. Shibudaya.
Is that like Achshuve, like we've seen in certain cases where there's like...
Where you have like full faith and credit for other parts of the Torah.
Right, certain...
Like we saw last year in Sukkah.
Yeah,
when
two
people
are interplaying with one another, then it creates a certain Achshuve on the...
Maybe. It's an interesting question. You know, just referring to the fact that last year, for example, we saw the sugya of Migo de Hevi Dolphin Lin Yin Sukkah Hevi Dolphin Lin Shabbos, that the height of the mechitza that works for a sukkah wall is also effective for a Rishus on Shabbos because of its status that comes in that context. It could be related. It could be, you could see it being different, but you could see it also having an overlap. But in any event, so that's just one area to think about as far as some of the points of jumping off into other details that can come out of this question. What's also related is the question that Kuntres HaSfekis asks, and a lot of later Achronim talk about. Kuntres HaSfekis was also written by the Ketzos' brother. We mentioned that already. What about if we say, like Tosfos and Ar Masechta, that the reason Ein Holchem B'Mamon Achar Harov is because the other party has a chazaka. So why don't we say also that we shouldn't follow for the purposes of Dinei Nefashos, because the individual is muchzak on his life. You are trying to be motzi his life from him. So why don't we use the same logic to address that situation? So here, you can see how that may differ from some of how we've understood muchzak. It doesn't, if we assume that muchzak is related to the degree to which it shows something about the situation, so that's not relevant in this case. A person is being accused of some avera, so the fact that he's currently alive is irrelevant to the truth of the avera. Now, when it comes to mamonis, we found Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya and Ein Holchem Mamon Achar Harov applying in both kinds of situations, but it's still interesting because here the definition of muchzak would certainly be more limited. And so, for example, how we understood Tosfos in our Masechta about the idea of the relationship between the miut and the chazaka, that the miut substantiates the chazaka and gives it viability. So that's not really relevant to the idea of somebody being muchzak in his life. Again, there are many approaches to that. As Rav Chana talks about, it's another topic which there is a lot one could branch off into. Hi.
That the
chazaka is irrelevant to the.
No, that you can use the fact that she has a chazaka over the fact that she could
have made. Well, there it's a little better because at least we know she was a psula at one point,
right.
And that is relevant to the question of
right.
whether it was like it's not completely dispositive, as I pointed out, because a psula eventually often changes into a non psula. But here, it's completely irrelevant. The fact that a person
right.
is currently alive doesn't tell us anything about whether he was Mechal Shabbos or not. Just to throw in another discussion, so we mentioned yesterday that one of the challenges that we have in figuring out the principle of in Halacha B'Menacha HaRov is not just that we do follow Rov for a lot of other things, including Din Nefashos and the like, but also, if we're saying there's a tension here between the Rov and the Muchzak wins, so how does that work with Ruba V'Chazaka or Ruba Adif, the idea that we find a few places in Shas that a Rov is generally preferable to a Chazaka? So that you could also approach in a number of ways. So just to illustrate that there are many different ways to consider it, I'll mention three that are found all in the Sefer Nosin Pirio. To Bav Metzia. Nos Imperio was written by Nosin Gestetner. Have we talked about him yet this year? So usually when we quote from Nosin Gestetner, it was a great posek in B'nai Brak. He passed away about 10 years ago. So most of his Sfarim are titled Lahoros Nosin. So we usually refer to that. But yeah, Sfarim on Masechta is called Nosin Imperio. So he considers this question. He says, if we normally say Ruba V'Chazaka, Ruba Adif, that normally a chazaka does not meet a rov. So why should it be that chezkes mamon is apparently treated differently? So he gives three suggestions. Do you want to try to guess any? Do you want to try to theorize on your own? Is there an advantage to this chazaka that you can point to? Yeah.
Maybe this is something that you're actually physically holding.
Okay, so say it better.
Versus another kind of chazaka, which is more just reality, like the nature of things, I guess.
Well, some chazakas are like that, but you could also say a chazaka, a chazaka de Marakama, for example. Let's say that the person, we know we had it yesterday. You know, so why is that worse? Sam? Okay. Okay. So. Okay, it's interesting. So the three answers he gives, they may have overlap between your two suggestions. So tell me if this is what you were getting at, either of you. Because so his first two answers, I said, is there a difference you can point at? That's his answer. He says, yeah, that you can point at it. That this is chazaka that is visible, and that doesn't just rely on some kind of awareness of the past. But we can look at right now and say, here's what's going on. This is in his hand. So, you know, that's worth 1,000 words. I don't know how you do the math of this is worth 1,000 words against 9/10 of the law. What does that mean? That I don't know. You have to enter that into your calculator. But this was worth a lot because you can look at it and point to his ownership. And if that's what you're getting at or not. A similar vein, the second day approach he gives is that this is different because it's trying to, everything else is talking about what was and trying to learn from what was, and this is looking at what is. And what is should presumably be more relevant to the question of what is than other things that are not currently present. I think that's right, subtly different. That's now the third is more different, and I think it's maybe similar to what Sam was saying. I don't know if this is exactly what you were saying. It says, normally we would rely on a rov when the rov only has to accomplish one thing. But in a mamonist case, it has to accomplish two things. It has to take it out of the rishus of the current holder, and put it in the rishus of the new guy who's asking for it. Now, that's not just a semantic difference. That's relevant because even once we establish that we can take it out of the guy who's holding it, still then it should be 50-50. So why should the one who's asking for it, should he get it? So therefore he assumes that, yes, we would rely on Rove when the Rove only has to accomplish one thing. But if the Rove is looking to accomplish both these things, then that's why it's in a weaker position in this one case when it's against the Chezkas Mammon. So it's only the Chezkas Mammon that has that issue that you're trying to actually remove something from someone's possession. So, as you mentioned, the concept of Motzim Rechel Varaya and the related notions, they come up throughout Nezikin and throughout Nashim, of course, also anything that has to do with the connection between people and Mammonist issues. So I just want to mention a few more, especially some that are relevant in our Masechta, as again we're trying to see as much of the Masechta as possible. So if we go back to the end of the third parak, so there's a Mishnah on Lamed Hei Amid Beis, and we can look at it together, and I could also look at this in more detail tomorrow. But the Mishnah talks about, let's say you have a shore that was gored by another shore. And who are the candidates for who gored the shore? Two other shoros. So just to look at, so if you have your Gemara, if you have Lamed Hei Amid Aleph, it's a long Mishnah, but look in the middle of it, the bottom of the page of Lamed Hei Amid Aleph, from the second to last line, Hayushnayim Rod Fimachar Echad, you have two different oxen who are chasing after a third one. Each one of these oxen is owned by a different person. Ze'omer Shor Chehizik, Ve'ze'omer Shor Chehizik. So the claim is that each one of them is accused of being the shore that did the damage. So what's the din? Shnehem Piturim. They're both Pater. So why is that? Why do you think they're both Pater? Because, as the Mishnah is reiterating, Hamotzi Mechaveru Olavaraya. It could be either one of them, and because we can't clarify which one it is, so therefore we have to assume it's a suffix on each one, and Hamotzi Mechaveru Olav Harayah. So that's an interesting din on a couple of levels, right? Because this is a little bit more of a chiddush than what we're talking about so far. Because it's one thing, so I say, keep picking on Jeb's laptop, so I'll continue. Jeb, I want your laptop. Right? So there's no reason to think that there's any question about the status here. It's only because I am making a fuss about it. So it's reasonable to say I should substantiate my position. Otherwise, there's no real question about the ownership of Jed's laptop. Here, we know there was an active hezek. And we know that there are two suspects. There's a closed set of suspects. It's these two oxen that we're talking about. And yet, we still apply Hamotzim and Chavero Olav Harai. So that is somewhat of a chiddush in terms of how to understand it. Or are you raising your hand?
Yeah. I feel like that seems, at least superficially, to be most similar to the case of Shishvilin. And we know that they're one of them definitely, I'm talking about the case where they both are
right.
Coming before Gesim together.
Uh-huh.
We know that one of them is definitely Tamei Tahor.
And therefore?
We say, meaning, if they're both coming, we said that if they both come to base them together as one, then they're both, we say, Safik Tamar Lechumra.
Okay.
So I feel like it's another reason to call this a Chiddush. I mean, this is, we have.
Since one of them did it, so we should say, therefore, what should the din be?
Another question to the Shnei Matur.
So what should the din be then? You're right, it's an interesting point. same. But it's I mean, they're coming from different places, but it's in the case of Shnei Shvilin. So, just to clarify what he's saying, so we talked last week about the din of Shnei Shvilin, and we only mentioned the other half in the chair. So just to clarify what you're talking about, that the din is that you have these two paths, one of them is Tamei, and somebody comes and says, I went on one of the two paths, we're allowed to tell him he's Tar because of Suffolk Tuma B'Rishos Rabim is Tar. But we can say that to two people on two consecutive days, even though they covered both paths between them. But if they come together, then you can't. Now, it's not clear exactly what the Maskana is then, but if they come together, apparently it's a problem. Now, Tosfos and Psachim, which quotes the Gemara over there, quotes that Mishnah. Tosfos and Psachim says, logically, it's not clear why you can't. Because the same stira that we're able to live with, the same intellectual stira that we know they're not both Tara, and we can live with it when we say this at two different times, we should also be able to live with it when they come at the same time. And therefore, Tosfos says it must be that's a Chumra D'Rabbanan. But conceptually, it's no worse than them coming at separate times. I thought maybe you could suggest, in terms of that Tosfos, that maybe it is different because the question is, what's the question? That's the question is, what's the question? That when an individual comes and says, am I Tamei or am I Tar? So then you could say to him, Safek Tuma versus Rabim Tar, you're Tar. And you can say that to the guy number two also, even though they can't both be Tar. But, factually. But when they come together, it changes the question. The question is not anymore, tell me what I am and tell me what I am. The question is, which one of the two of us is Tamei? And then there's no Kula. There's no answer to that is more Makel than the other one. So then there's no application of Suffolk Lakula in that case, because the question shifted from, is this okay and is this okay, to which one of these two is not okay. So maybe that's part of the issue. So I don't know from that perspective how much it affects here. So here we're dealing with the burden that's going to be on someone else to take money from the Mazik. If each one has reasonable doubt, as they would say, to go back to our comparisons to civil law, right? So if you have, you know, when you convict somebody in court in America, you have a presumption of innocence. And because of the presumption of innocence, in order to be deprived of your life and liberty, you need to have a conviction beyond a reasonable doubt. So to lumdicize that, you can't have any suffix. You can't have anything that reasonable doubt, so it's got to be a din suffix, not just any minor question, but something that actually counts as a suffix. So if you have somebody who looks pretty guilty, but you have somebody else who could also look guilty of the same crime and only one of them did it, so then that's a suffix now, because it could be that guy also. So that's a valid defense, because now you have a reasonable doubt. So to hear, to be motzi somebody from their money, you need to do that without suffix. It's got to be a raya. So if each one can point to the other, that creates a suffix. So the Nizok doesn't seem to have the ability to take it from either of them, even though there was a clear act of hezek here from somebody. Now it's slightly interesting enough that the Mefarshim do address it, that the language of the Mishnah is a little bit surprising, because just think about this for a second. Again, you can wonder how much weight to put on this. But so the language of the Mishnah is Shorcha Hizik. V'zeh Omer Shorcha Hizik. So is there something a little bit to notice about that language? How do you translate Shorcha Hizik? V'zeh Omer Shorcha Hizik. Right? It means you're sure. So who's talking to who here? Who's this conversation taking place in between? Mi Amar El Mi, as they would ask you in elementary school. Right? So Shorcha Hizik, Mi Amar El Mi. Yeah, Jed?
The Gorers.
They're talking to each other?
Potentially, yeah.
Why? So the guy who got Gord is talking to who? Why are they all talking in a triangle? Do you see the question here? Like, what's really what you assume is happening is the nitva or the nizak is being toveya, let's say one of them, and is saying, "You gored my ox." So how should he respond?
He did.
He did, right? So how do you say that in Hebrew? Sharo hizik. So why is he saying Sharcho hizik? He's saying that the victim, his own ox, gored his dead ox. You see the issue here? Again, you wonder how much you focus on this, but you see the question. The dialogue doesn't seem to work. If it's both saying Sharcho, how do you have two people talking to each other in this case and each one is saying Sharcho? You would think that, okay, so then the Nizak is saying to one of these candidates, Shorcha, and he's responding, no, Shoro, it was the other guy. And then maybe the same conversation happens again. Yeah?
Maybe it's because, like, for sure, one of the...
For sure, no pun intended. Sorry, okay, go on, yeah? Sorry.
Both of the potential gores are arguing with each other because definitely one of them is going to have to pay. That's for sure.
But it isn't,
though. It's a given. It's that someone did it, and those are the two candidates. It's just a matter of who. So now they have to be tobe against each other as who saves their money.
I mean, but it's not to mitzvah. Like if this was a case where people are coming lot to this today shemayim, right? So then I could hear that. You know, I actually paid a shiva call yesterday, and the person was saying that His brother had passed away. He lived in Eretz Yisrael, and he was saying about how amazing Eretz Yisrael is that somebody hit his car and damaged his car and left a note saying he's going to pay for the damages. And this person was so sincere about it that he made sure to seek him out and give him a check before the insurance came through because he didn't want him to lose that. And he was ready. The guy was already impressed. And then the person contacted him again. The mazik contacted him again and said, "I have to come speak to you after he had already paid." And the reason he did that is because he felt he had to ask mechila because he was a mazik, so he has to ask mechila. So I mentioned that, you know, we did that sugya this year, right? The question of asking mechila for hezek, whether you're mechuyev or not. So that's that was the sugya in our masechta that we did. So if this conversation is between two honest people who are trying to come to be latzis l'day shemayim. So okay, so we could hear it. So you see these two people, each one has an ox, and they want to come clean and confess to the nizak and go pay. So they're arguing amongst themselves, who is it? Okay, it was you. But since that's not the context here, it's not the way it happens, right? The nizak is being tovei of somebody. So the nizak is saying, you should pay me. And that person says, no, it wasn't me, it was the other guy. Okay, so then maybe the nizak will go back to that guy and will have the same conversation with him. But then, either way, it should be Shorcha Hizik, and the response is Shoro. So there are a couple of approaches to this. One approach is just interesting to think about. So, how would Sumchos relate to this case? Right, if this is one of the instances where Sumchos would argue, and we say Amotz Mechaver Lo Haraya, but Sumchos would have said Cholkin, you split. How do you split in this case? Let's assume if you were to say this is not, the din isn't Hamotzi Mechel Varaya, but the din is Mamon Amutal Masafek Cholkin, you split it. How do you split it? Sam? Maybe.
Each pay a quarter.
They each pay a quarter and that's it? Right, so what I mean, that's a viable possibility also. So what Sam and Maury said both theoretically sound like possibilities. So what Maury is saying, if I understand, you say each because they split with the Nizak. That the Nizak basically he takes half the loss and the other half goes to the potential Mazikin. And because there's a suffix between the two of them, so then they split it.
Isn't she the Sabaya later on in our Gemara where he says that that you sort of reevaluate what the... I wonder if it's similar to the case of our Mishnah,
uh-huh,
where he says that that you're splitting the... I mean, it probably doesn't...
It has its differences. But here, that's an interesting possibility that maybe it should be 25%, 25%, that each one of the candidates pays 25%. And Nizek is also splitting it, so he takes a 50% loss. But what Sam is saying is, no, it's pashut that the payment has to come from these potential mazikim. So the diun between a motzi mechav l'raya is one again, or rather cholkin, because we're not saying mechav l'raya, the diun but cholkin is between the two of them. That's not what you're saying. Okay.
So
more. Okay, fine. So there are those who interpret against both of you then. There are those who interpret that the whole fight here is between the two of them. That basically it's clear, according to Simchus, that they're the ones under discussion here. And therefore, the split would be in between the two. So that's why they're arguing it out and saying, oh, shorcha, no shorcha, etc., etc., because they have to, between themselves, provide the whole difference here. So it's an interesting question. But on top of this whole din, and this din, the way it's in the Mishnah is brought in Shulchan Aruch like this, right, that two people's oxen are both suspected of goring a third ox, so they're both pater because of Hamotzi Mechaver L'Haraya. It's the din of the Mishnah, it's the din as it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. But there's an interesting machlokas between the Chavos Yair and his Tshuvas and Simon Reish Chav Ches and the Gilyone HaShas. Who wrote the Gilyone HaShas? Yosef Engel, exactly. So not to be confused, unless you want to confuse them, with the Gilyon HaShas. The Gilyon HaShas of Kiva Eger is published on the Daf. The Gilyone HaShas is of Yosef Engel, as Ha'aris on Shas, in addition to his many other Svarim. And that's a separate Sefer. So in the Gilyone HaShas, to this Daf, to Bava Kama Lamed Hei, so he argues on the Chavos Yair. Chavos Yair discusses the following situation. Let's say you have something similar to this, where you have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. And Reuven has an ox that is found gored. And Shimon and Levi both are potentially owners of oxen that could have done it. But Shimon has 10 oxen in this area. And Levi only has one. Does that matter? What do you think?
Can you repeat the case?
The case is Reuven has an ox that got gored. There are two possible ox owners who could be responsible, Shimon and Levi. So far, that's exactly the case of our Mishnah.
Right? That's one ox or two oxen?
There's one dead ox. That's Reuven's ox.
Right.
Right. There are two owners of oxen, of different oxen, that could be responsible, could be liable, Shimon and Levi. So far, that's exactly our Mishnah, the Mishnah here in Lamed Hei. What's different is that the Mishnah describes each one has one ox that was seen charging. So there's one ox per person. But let's say it's not like that. Let's say we didn't see either one of them do it, but we know it's a finite area, so it's only a certain amount of oxen that are possible. And Shimon has 10 oxen, and Levi has one. Does that matter? So set, what do you say? Okay, so... So it's not an equal suffix.
It's Rov seems to, I mean, just because it's Rov, it would be Shimon's
fault. Okay, so.
Maybe Rov the
moment. So what do you want to say? How are you voting here? Okay, Jed, do you want to.
It sounds like it connects to that case about, like, you know, 9 Putim and 1 Yisrael, and how we say that it's. If it's Kabua.
Right.
So
well, we didn't talk about Kabua. I mean, the Mishnah talks about Kabul. Right. We didn't bring it into our discussion.
Right.
But
so it'd be Mechsa Mechsa in this case because.
We didn't talk about. Well, so the question there we talked about was, do we go by Rove food or Rove meat or Rove restaurants, or Rove meat stores? So here, There, it's a different question because we know we're going after Rove one way or another. The question was, how do we count the Rove? Here, the question is, should the Rove matter? So, says the Chavis Yair, and I don't know if this is where you were going to vote, says the Chavis Yair, no! Ain holchem mamon achar Rove! Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. That's similar to what Joe was bringing up. That's in a case where, well, we have three situations. We compared the Bach to that machlokus about nine stores versus one store that has as much meat as all the others.
I was thinking about Bach more face value. We're just saying that, like, if we understood in a very simplified way that once we have a rove that can be interpreted in a different way, then...
Oh, you're just focusing on that part of it. That some roves might potentially be, but let's say we could tweak the numbers any way we want. Let's say there's only three oxen in this area, but two of them are Shimon's and one of them is Levi's.
It's a game of statistics.
Right, well, is it? Does it matter? Does it ever matter? So, says the Chavis Yair, no, because ain holchem mamon achar rove. So, doesn't matter. We don't count up that Shimon has more. It's still going to be the same situation as the Mishnah.
What if they killed the person?
What if they what? So then, that shouldn't affect... Well, that's actually interesting. You're saying you're not talking about the greater level of liability that comes with it. You're saying the greater likelihood that it was...
No, one, there's two separate things. One is the muad, which is greater likelihood.
Right.
There's also the all muads, and they kill a person.
Right.
And then it's no longer DNA mominous.
Well, it's still mominous because mominous, the shore, is still monetary property. So...
Aren't you also liable,
not to be killed. So as it still would come out, to mominus. But in any event, so that's an interesting question whether that should affect anything. But so the Chavis Yair says it doesn't matter. In Hochma Mamun Achar Rov. So Rav Yosef Engel, who quotes him here in the Gleoni Ashas, he says, no, that's so pasha that it shouldn't matter. He's not sure. He writes it in a tentative language. But he says this might not be a Ein Holchem Mamon Achar HaRov situation. So it's because it could be that here we're trying to establish something factual. We want to know which ox it was. And the Mamonus will flow from that. So to say that the facts are that there were many more oxen for one guy than the other, he wasn't sure that that's not relevant. So it's a tentative disagreement in the Chavis Yair. He quotes the Chavis Yair and he says, "Eino barer." It's not so clear that he's right, and ulai, maybe you would say differently. So theoretically, this could come up. You have situations, Poskim talk about, you have situations where there was some damage done, and two people are equally potentially responsible. For example, it's been discussed, let's say you have damage was done because people left cleaning materials around in the apartment building or construction materials. And there were two tenants that both did construction work. But each one says it was the other guy's materials. So would it matter if one guy did a lot more construction work than the other?
It's just as likely... It's just as possible, but not just as likely.
So should that matter? So that seems to be the machlokus, the Chavis Yair and Rav Yosef Engel. And that's itself something which could end up impacting.
How do you pass?
So how do you pass the pen? Presumably you have to say, I think it just, this is a machlokus achronim, it's hard to know how to paskin absolutely. But presumably you'd have to paskin like the Chavis Yair because you still end up, you end up having a suffix to begin with. Right? It sounds like it's really the same situation as the Mishnah. The only question is, should we add in Rov? So since we don't have a source that says we do add in Rov, and you have the Chavis Yair saying, don't leave things as it is, and then you have Bari Vashem here, essentially, because Rav Engel himself is saying that he's not sure that he disagrees. So I think it's going to be hard to be Motzi Mamun based on that. But anyway, Yes, Jebediah.
Can we say a lot like the Ritva, that this is a case which is not Taloi Viteva, and therefore we would not go after the rule, because really it could just be anyway. It could be either thing.
But it's different than the Ritva, because the Ritva is saying that when you're just saying like a general chazaka of what people do, a general rove of what people do, and that's subject to change, so then it's hard to rely on that. But here, there's a finite number of oxen that are around right now, and that's what's relevant. It's not like you're saying people tend to have a lot of oxen around.
I was talking about more in terms of the construction, where it's like they're their own practices, and not necessarily what's around.
Yeah, but here, so in this case, presumably we're talking about like how many oxen there are to work with at the moment, and therefore that's a different kind of suffix. Hi. Okay, so maybe I'll try to throw in one more din about where you could find the differences in terms of what do we ever say not Hamotzi Michal V'Haraya and the like. Do you ever put the burden on the Nitva? So you recall when we started this sugya that our Gemara says that we say Hamotzi Michal V'Haraya, and that's true even if we're talking about Shamo Bari. That if the motzi is a bari, and the machzik is a shema, the muchzik is a shema, still his chazaka is more significant. So the fact that the motzi is sure about it, still don't say that that changes hamotzi mechaver lo v'haraya. Right? That's from our Gemara. So it's just worth being aware that there are some qualifications to this. So if we were to look together, for example, on Daf Kuf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, at the middle of the page, after the second Mishnah, so there the Gemara relates that what if somebody says, Itmar manali biyadcha v'halo amr eni yodeya? You owe me money, and the other guy says, I don't know. So Rav Huna v'Rav Yehuda amr chayiv, Rav Nachman v'Rav Yochanan amr pater, that seems to be the din, right? Which makes sense, because Motzi Mechaver lo V'haraya. So Rav Huna v'Rav Yehuda amar chayev bari v'shema bari adiv. So why do you have the other opinion that he's chayev? Because the one who's claiming it says, I'm sure you owe me. And the one who is the mochzak says, I don't know, maybe I do. So their opinion is bari v'shema bari adiv. So Rav Nachman Yochanan amar pater. Why? Because oki mamoni, mamona b'cheskes mari. Because we leave the money with the mochzak. So apparently, despite Shema Ubari, despite the fact that the Mufzak is Shema, and the one asking for it is Bari, we still give the priority to the Mufzak. So Tanan of Alam Amarlo, Eni Odeya, Nilvisani, Pater. So if the person says, I don't know whether you lent me in the first place, so he's Pater. So, and the Gemara has a discussion about that. This is in contrast to what we also find about if somebody says, I know that I borrowed, but I don't know if I paid back. So then the din switches. So if a person says, I don't remember ever borrowing from you, because I'm not saying I didn't borrow from you, but I don't remember. So he's a shema, and the guy who's saying, I want you to pay me is a bari, but still, hamotzi mechaver lo v'haraya doesn't matter. But what if the borrower, the alleged borrower, doesn't say, I don't remember whether I borrowed or not? He says, I remember that I borrowed, but I don't remember whether I paid you back. So then that seems to flip it, and now the bari wins. So there, the dynamic is different. And that's an interesting exception. And Nosei Kalim, the Shulchan Aruch, the Taz, and the others, they offer explanations as to why that is. The Rif talks about it a little bit also, so maybe I'll give you a little Mar Makomos to look at about that. So maybe we'll just say a few more words about that next time, just to finish off before segueing into the next topic. I also just want to say a little bit about our Gemara and the third din in our Gemara about this Kakel Tavei Tchila. So maybe I'll give you for next time, just a few more mekomos about this din, and a few makaris about that, and we will continue from there. Make sense? So let's just quickly recap what we spoke about, and then we'll daven. So, what did we talk about? So we did a little Torah Mod experiment, and read Wikipedia discussion of possession as 9/10 of the law, and looked at how that impacts things. Looks at where there was overlap to things that we had seen within the concept of chazaka. We talked about the haflaz question in the context of pidgin haben. When do you say we follow rov and when do you not? We talked about the kuntras hasfekis question. Why do we say that we don't go v'amanach harov because of the chazaka and the miut? Why don't we say that that should also be true for nefashos because the defendant is mochzak on his life? And we talked about what the possible ramifications would be in that context. And then we talked about the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Hey, which tells us a case of Motzah Mechal Varai in another context, where you have two different shore owners who might be liable for damage to the third shore. So because of the suffix between the two of them, so they're both Pater, Motzah Mechavero, Olav Haraya. And we talked a little bit about why the language is Shorcha Hizik to both of them and not one each blaming it on a third party and saying Shoro Hizik. And we talked about one possibility that that might affect how Sumchus would understand the situation. And then we talked about the Machlokas, the Chavis Yair and Yosef Engel, about what if there's a rove involved, what if one of them has many more axes that could potentially have been the offender, and he assumes still in Hochma Menachah HaRov, and Yosef Engel is Masupik, that maybe because here we're seeking to determine the facts, that maybe that should be a useful rove. And then we introduced this concept talking about the notion of Bari V'Shama, how our Gemara says that even though one party, the Mukhsak, could be a Shama and the Toveya might be a Bari, still we say Amosimech Averil Varaya, that does not affect things. Although we see over here on Daf Kufir Ches that is the Machlokis, but that's how our Gemara ended up, and that seems to be the din. But there is a distinction between different circumstances, that it's one thing if I say to you, you borrowed money from me, you should return it, and your response is, I don't know, I don't remember borrowing money from you. So then, okay, you're a Shem and I'm a Bari, and we still say, Hamotzi Mechavel of Haraya. But what if you say, I remember borrowing money from you, that happened, I just don't remember if I paid you back or not, and therefore your Shema is on that part. So then the din changes, so maybe next time we'll start with talking a little bit about why that is. Okay, so who would like to daven for us? All right, Jed, you got it first.
And snap.